Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage, and today we're in the big city of Hartford, Connecticut. Unfortunately, didn't get a chance to stop by and see John in his hometown in Framingham, Massachusetts, but we're talking today with John Hendren. And John has certainly been around for a long time, and we want to get his thoughts. He had a very exciting career. So, John, let's see. The date, by the way, is November the 23rd, 1996. And we'll probably be interrupted from time to time because we're trying to get a bite to eat while this is going on before John goes to work tonight with, what is it, Windsor Old Towners, John?
Yes, Windsor Old Towners.
Okay, why don't you tell us where you were born and brought up? I understand it was out in the Midwest somewhere.
Yes, born out in Chicago Heights, Illinois.
Okay.
Back on August 23rd, 1924.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. How the time does go.
How does it? And so did you do any square dancing out there, or how did you get interested in square
dancing?
Yeah,
I got started in the Midwest, in fact.
Okay.
The wife and I started square dancing, I believe, in the year about 1948-49, somewhere along there.
Okay.
And danced, I think my first caller was Russ Bone out in Illinois. Square danced for 4 or 5 years before the calling bug did bite me out there.
Uh-huh. How'd you get onto your first, how'd you get into calling, per se?
There weren't that many callers in our vicinity, and of course, being over enthusiastic, I felt like if they couldn't come to me, then I would have to bring the dancers to me right there. So I started calling to a small group. I guess we both learned with each other, like many of us have done in the past.
Right,
sure.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that happened probably around 53, 54, somewhere in that, before I got into the calling bit of it. Had my first club, I think, in 54.
You're still out there in Illinois now.
Still out in Illinois,
yeah.
And stayed there in Illinois, calling, working clubs, club dates, small festivals, and attending the nationals.
Oh, yeah.
Until early 63, before the company I worked for transferred me to New England.
Oh, I see. That's how you got out here.
That's how I got out here.
Yeah. And your company was based where?
They were based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with a branch I worked for in Kankakee, Illinois.
Okay. And where was the place out here in New England?
Out here, I became a district sales manager in 63 with home office was in Springfield, Mass.
I see. Okay. So, well, I know from having known you for so many years that you were busy, busy, busy all day long, and busy almost every night that I knew about.
Biggest problem I had was juggling the two schedules and make them jive.
Right. So, when you moved out here about what time?
March. I came out by myself to look for a home in March of 63, and my wife and family came out in July of 63.
Okay. Speaking of family, did you come from a musical family, John?
Not really. My mother, that side of the family, were kind of old church singers, but I was always interested in music. I did play the guitar in high school. I did have lessons on the drums and lessons on the trombone.
Right. So, well, and there was a big change for you to get away from your own clubs out in Illinois. How did you get started out here in New England?
Well, it was kind of a lucky break, I guess, for me, because I got out here just about the time that the Western Square Dance explosion took place.
Right.
And a lot of the callers were just learning it, so I was kind of even with them at that point, because we were all learning and grabbing and trying to do it.
Yeah.
So when I got out here, I drove up from New York City with a company car and stopped off in Springfield because it was in April. I remember that, and they had the New England Square Dance Convention was going on.
All right. Okay.
So I lucked into that, and I walked into that place on a Saturday morning.
So we were interrupted there for a second, but you said you were at the New England Convention. And this was a Saturday morning, so go ahead, Kenneth.
Yeah, and I think one of the first callers I met was Earl Johnston.
Okay.
And so I struck up a conversation with Earl, and he invited me to stay and have dinner with him. Since Marion wasn't there for dinner that night, I could take her ticket, so I got acquainted with Earl.
There you go.
But I wasn't able to call because I wasn't a New England caller.
Right.
And I wasn't established out here yet, so
sure.
So I didn't have the opportunity to call at that time.
Yeah, but must have been a kind of a chore trying to work into some square dance clubs. You probably started with a new group.
You know, normally it is, I suppose, but since I couldn't call on the program that first night there, somebody told me, I forget who it was, that there were a number of barns throughout New England at that
right.
time, as you well know.
Yeah.
And Bay Path being one of them, with Chet Smith, was on my, I would pass that exit going out to the Boston Hotel where I was being put up.
Right.
So I zinged into the Bay Path barn in there, and Barbara was at the door, and she asked me if I was a caller, and I said, yes, I am. And she said, well, come on in. She said, Chet will be down shortly, because luckily he was calling that night.
Oh, good.
So Chet came over, and I introduced myself, and he invited me to call a guest tip, and
okay.
I did that, and I got a pretty good reception from it, and so he said, hey, it's about 9:45, why don't you finish off the night? I said, hey, I'd love that. So I finished off the night, and as a result of that first hour and 15, 20 minutes, you know that I picked up one club that was just starting out looking for a caller, which was the Lamplighters in Springfield.
All right.
And I picked up 167 dances based over a two-year period, two-and-a-half-year period, and just from that one night.
I'll be darned.
And I was amazed, really.
Overnight success.
Well, and then I, the next day I had a call from Dick Doyle, invited me to go with them for the next week to the different clubs they called at, let me call a guest tip.
Good.
And then they suggest I contact Charlie Baldwin, but I did. Charlie said, well, I'll take you over to Square Acres and to Kramer's Hayloft.
Right.
And that he did. And I didn't get to call a guest tip at Kramer's, but I did get to call with Dick Steele at Spur Acres.
Oh, yeah.
And I got another 20 or 30 dances based on that.
Wow.
So I was off and rolling without even buying a home yet.
Right.
So I kind of lucked out there.
Hope you didn't have to commute from Illinois there.
No, I got to fly home every third weekend.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of kept my dates back in Illinois for the third weekend, and I had dates out here for the other 2 weeks I was out this way.
That's fantastic.
So I kind of meshed them in between there.
Right. So, all right. Well, I know you've been really, really busy ever since you finally got established and got settled in Framingham. And I know you and I shared a weekend together one time down in Connecticut.
Very memorable.
we had one experience there that we never were going to duplicate anywhere.
Yes, Bob.
But be that as it may. What are some of the other callers you've been affiliated with?
Well, there are a number of very fine callers, and of course, I think probably the one caller that early in my career that I thought very highly of was Ed Gilmore.
Right.
And I was impressed with his timing and his phrasing
right.
and his music. God, his
right.
music was so great.
Yep.
And I was impressed by the likes of Joe Lewis because he was a one-man band, and Joe was an entertainer,
right.
and the people had a good time.
Right.
And as no surprise to you, maybe I was quite impressed when I came to New England with Al Brundage. I had a chance to call with Al on I think it was the Atlantic Festival down in Atlantic City.
Right.
And I think he was probably right at the top of the crest at that time, because I'll tell you, Al had, which is no news to anybody who's been affiliated with square dancing very long, Al had the most, I've never had anybody or seen anybody before or anybody since that had the rhythmic syncopated styling that they had.
Right.
I was impressed, and of course I couldn't copy it. I wasn't smart enough to copy it, I guess. But nobody else was either.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to get affiliated with Al on a number of weekends and a number of overseas trips.
Okay, I was going to ask you about overseas trips. You might as well talk about them now.
Tell us
a little bit about them.
We were together, Al and I were together at his request for, I think, four or five trips to Hawaii.
Oh, yes.
We went to Jamaica twice, I believe. We went to Bermuda once or twice. We had scheduled a trip for Las Vegas, which didn't go quite as well as we'd liked it had it gone, so I didn't make that one.
Okay.
But those were the overseas that I can remember that I was most impressed with. I remember the first time we went to Hawaii, we had, I think, 22 squares.
Is that right? Wow.
God, it was the hardest job of that was keeping track of the people.
Oh, I imagine. Right.
Between islands, God.
Oh, you kept traveling between islands.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That had to be a job.
Yeah.
Right. As long as you didn't have to swim, I guess it was all right.
No, no.
Okay. What about national conventions? Now, you mentioned them earlier, before you moved out here.
Yeah, we attended every national convention while as dancers.
Yeah.
And I did for the first three or four years as a caller. But once again, I think that early on, the callers kind of established their calling schedule to travel throughout the whole United States based upon that. And my job didn't lend itself to letting me plan that kind of a schedule. So
right.
I kind of, as I got busier, I wasn't able to make those national festivals as often as I would have liked.
Right.
So I kind of dropped off of that. The last one I think I went to was at Cobo Hall in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay. That was a biggie.
That was a biggie.
Yeah, yeah. It was a real biggie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there. Now you've been running several weekends yourself.
Yeah, I do probably 8 or 10 weekends a year in New England that I put on myself with the help of other callers. I'm fortunate to be able to work with the likes of Jim Mayo, Red Bates, just to name a few.
Yeah.
And for a number of years worked Hidden Valley, Dude Ranch with Ken Anderson and Dick Jones, Red Bates.
Right.
I think I'm still doing one of those, have done for 33 years now with Red Bates.
Well, you're a multifaceted caller, too. You call practically all the levels, I think.
Well, I call all levels up through C1. That's about as far as I take it.
Well, I don't know if I ever mentioned it to you, but you're probably one of my favorite all-time callers. Primarily because of the rhythm, the timing, and the phrasing. One of the problems that I found when I moved out to Albuquerque is the tempo is very, very fast.
Yeah.
And for this old plod-along New Englander, it never seemed to jive with me, but I know your tempo was pretty slow compared to that.
Well, you know, I'd like to say that, well, I was able to do that from the start, but I was probably caught up in that fast trend early on in my career when I first got out here. I know I was going 100 miles an hour, I'm
sure.
Right. And of course, the dancers were a lot younger.
Yeah.
And they didn't complain as much as they would normally complain now if you tried to do that same thing.
Right.
So newer callers in the last 10 years coming in and trying to do that same thing are met with a lot of opposition, either here or anyplace else, I would think.
Right.
And I think I was able to control my tempo a number of years back and let the dancers win. And as they got older, you had to change with them to keep letting them win.
Right. So, well, this is really very, very true, I'm sure. And I wish we could find more of it around here and there. Do you have any other hobbies, John? You don't have any time, probably.
Well, I don't have a lot of time, but I am an avid genealogist.
Good.
Family research. Have been for about 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And I've also been a baseball card collector since I was probably seven years old.
Okay.
It's going to be a very expensive hobby, though.
Okay. Have you gotten involved in round dancing at all? Or?
Early in my calling career, I did teach rounds, as we all had to. We had to do the contras, the line dancing, the rounds, the squares. You had to do everything.
Right.
And one of those little misunderstandings between husband and wife early on, where you don't agree on how to teach a round, made that part of my career short-lived.
Right. Well, it was long about that time that we started getting exclusive cures anyway,
I think
we all phased out of that about that time.
Yeah.
Right. What about Caller Lab?
I have never been a joiner, and it's not because I didn't believe in things like that, but because of the work schedule that I had during the day, and especially in New England, where they expected me to be Johnny on the spot at any given time, even on the weekend. You know, I've been contacted at Kirkwood Lodge. I've been contacted in Canada, and it's a little touch and go there.
Right.
So I didn't really have that kind of time. I was calling 22, 25, 27 nights a month sometimes.
Right.
And working a full 8 to 10 hour day schedule. So it was kind of tough to Caller Lab when they first started. I think within the first 14 to 25, Al Brundage was instrumental in getting me a letter from them asking me to chime in, which was very early on.
Right.
But I couldn't make the mandatory commitment that you had to make to fly out here and to go there and do it.
Right.
I just couldn't do it.
Right.
And but I do believe in Caller Lab. I think they've done a fine job. I believe in all the things that they've attempted and done and attempted and haven't done.
Right. How about recordings, John?
Yes, I've recorded on probably 5 or 6 different labels over the years, about 35, 37 records, starting way back with Flip Records in Chicago, Illinois.
All right.
Well, Horace Hall, caller from up on the north side of Chicago, we recorded Sauerkraut, I think, was a terrible, terrible record. If anybody finds one out there, destroy it immediately.
Right. Well, you're like Al. I remember Al saying he wished he could find some more that you'd like to buy him up and use them for speed practice.
I guess.
Right. One of the things that I've been asking people is, how do you feel about costuming? You know the trend of square dancing as it's going today, and a lot of younger people are reluctant to get into square dancing because they feel they have to wear funny-looking dress.
Well, you know, I've always felt strongly about square dance attire, and I don't necessarily look upon it as funny square dancing apparel. I think that men look great. I think that callers especially should look greater all the time.
Yeah.
I think they should always wear a coat or a suit if possible, and a clean shirt and a tie, and spit shine on her boot.
Right.
And I think that square dancers, I think men should have long sleeve shirts and a tie is appropriate. I think women look wonderful in squaw dresses back in the early days.
Right.
Crinolines and full skirts. Now, it's not mandatory. I think women with the long dress with no skirt look fine.
Right.
I don't think there's any place in square dancing for shorts and jeans and that kind of stuff.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Having looked at a few samples around the country.
Oh, geez, yeah. And, you know, I see on television the country dancing and all this stuff, and, God, I see some outfits on there that had to cost some money and look kind of funny, too.
Yeah.
They look funnier than hell on some of our older citizens right now who have been staunch followers in the believers in square dancing for the last 40 or 50 years.
Right. Okay. Well, John, one of the things that I've been asking people, what do you think is the appeal to calling square dances? Or what do you find appealing about it?
From my own personal standpoint,
right,
you mean?
Yes.
From a caller standpoint?
Yep.
Well, I think that probably different callers have a different appeal. For me personally, it was the music to start with. I've always loved country western music. I guess that's the cowboy in me. But and I sang with a country western band before I started calling out in Chicago.
There you go.
And I sang with 11-piece orchestra out in Illinois before moving out here.
Uh-huh.
And so the music aspect always was a draw for me.
Right.
And I've always been a people person before calling. I've been associated with people all my working career in sales. The company sent me to about 3 different Toastmaster public speaking courses for their benefit as well as mine.
Right.
And so I've always been at ease around people and enjoy people. And so the calling aspect lends itself to that, just like in sales. And the caller has to sell himself to the dancer.
Right.
If they don't want to buy you, then they don't want to buy what you're selling either.
Right, right. What do you think is the situation today with square dancing? Where do you think square dancing has been, and where do you think it is now, and what's going to happen in the future?
Well, I think as you look back over the years, square dancing has always been a peak and valley thing to some extent. But I, as far back as I can remember, I've never seen the valley as deep as the one we're in right now.
Right.
And I think that, as anybody else probably would say, it's due to you're not feeding it in the bottom to let it find its way up through the system. Classes are down, some in most cases extinct, and they're just not there for whatever reason. No replacement for the dancer who over the last 30, 40, 45 years has retired, lost a spouse, moved to Florida, moved to Arizona, moved to California.
Right.
And as they go, so goes the activity. And you look out on the floor now, and the people that you're calling to now are in the age bracket of 55 to 85.
True.
And at the top of that, at 75 to 85, they're drifting away slowly but surely, too.
True.
So I see us at probably the lowest ebb that we've been at as an activity for the years I've been in. And I think that we're going to continue in that direction until it hits bottom. And bottom, by bottom I mean to where you're losing club material officers. They don't want to run the club after many years of doing the same thing, and nobody else wants to take the job. Just 2 clubs folded last month, I should say, up in the North Shore. They have plenty of money in the kitty. They get 15, 18 squares at their Saturday night dances, but nobody wants to take the responsibility of running the club. They're
right.
Tired.
Yes.
So I see the activity as being now and in the immediate future of 2 to 4 or 5 years caller run. And they'll be smaller groups. They'll be run by a caller. He'll take the money, pay the rent, do the advertising, and take what's left, if there's any left.
Mm-hmm.
And there won't be much left, probably.
There won't be much left, right.
But if it's to continue as it is right now, and that's what's going to happen. I think that when we hit the bottom of the valley, that we're going to have to start over. And we're going to have to make sure, hopefully, that this time around, we will have learned from the last time around that let's not rush to kill ourselves, and let's get the broom dance back, and let's have the pie nights, and let's let them have some fun. And these young people will have fun with it again if we let them.
Right.
But we have to let them have fun again. I look back on the years I danced, And I still had a ball. I just laughed myself crazy on the broom dance.
Mm-hmm.
The music stopped and you didn't get the chair and you're out.
Right.
And they passed the broom or you were out. The pie nights and the polkas and the line dance. Not a lot of any one thing, but a mixture of all of it.
Right.
But you have fun. And but I think we've lost sight of that.
Well, that was a sociable aspect of the activity, which we kind of lost.
Yeah.
Of course, Jim Mayo has been saying that he thinks there are three aspects, and that's sensual, which we're completely disregarding today, and the intellectual, which goes into the challenge,
yeah,
plus the social. And he said we're allowing the social aspect of it to be taken care of by the dancers, and we're forgetting the sensual part and concentrating on the intellectual part.
Well, I suppose there's a lot of merit to what he said. The intellectual part, I wouldn't necessarily want the dancer to think that that he wasn't too intellectual if all he wanted to do was plus.
Right. But,
because I know some pretty smart people doing plus out there. It's what you want as a dancer or what you as a caller want.
Right.
And,
well, I'm afraid that the musical portion of the square dancing has kind of gotten out of hand.
That's the part I see.
Disappeared.
Yeah, that's the part I see. Some of the records I hear put out today are really, really repetitious. Some of the records are that they're reproducing. Or reproducing records that I can remember doing 30 years ago,
right?
35 years ago.
Yeah.
So they don't sound a hell of a lot better now than they did then.
Right. A little different orchestration,
yeah,
and instrumentation, and that's about it. Well, John, I know you've got to go to work here pretty quick, and I don't want you to get overstuffed in front of the microphone, but...
No.
So... I want to really thank you very, very much for taking the time to get off the highway and sit down for a few minutes and let us have the benefit of your expertise.
Well,
and really appreciate it, John, and we'll look forward to seeing you around here and there.
Very good. I do appreciate it, and thank you very much, Bob.
Okay.